the Chase Down Podcast. My name's Carter Rodriguez, my usual host, Justin Rowan. We're going to give him the night off because it's time to get degenerate. Joining the Chase Down this evening is Nate Jacobson, one of my very, very good friends and also the best gambler I know. And I thought it'd be fun to invite Nate on, talk through the best gambling angles to start the season. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
Carter, I'm thrilled to be on the show and talking betting. I'm doing great. Just came back from Vegas, so I'm definitely in the betting mood. Picked up NBA over-under sheet at the Westgate Casino and Sportsbook. And I always enjoy talking basketball with you, so it's an honor to be on your show, and I miss working with you in Chicago.
Yeah. How was the Westgate? I hear, like, what I've kind of always heard is that it's, like, kind of a dump, but the sportsbook is, like, unreal.
Yeah, from the outside of the building, it doesn't look like the nicest hotel. Looks pretty outdated compared to some of the other places, especially on the Strip. But inside, pretty cool casino, a really, really cool setup for watching sports, especially the NFL, where I was on Sunday, and they have a separate watch party in their theater. So really cool to watch football and just hang out and hang out with everyone who's excited and watching the games, betting, a bunch of people, a bunch of Joe Publics, as we like to call them, in their favorite NFL jerseys, screaming about the end of the Panthers game because the Panthers had a teaser and the Browns winning, which a lot of people are excited about.
I think that's the cool thing about being in a sports book is it's like normally when you're sweating out a stupid teaser or like a ridiculous like series of events, like you're kind of alone. Like you only have like if you're with friends, they're like they just probably think you're stupid.
Right. Or, yeah. And you don't want to annoy your friends who might they don't care about your bet and whether you win or lose. But when you're in a sports book, everyone either you're with the people and wanting to win together or against them, because at the end of the day, it's you against the house and you want the players to come out on top.
Yeah. I was curious, like I was thinking about your time in Vegas and I was like, I wonder what's better between like a packed sports book on an NFL Sunday full of a bunch of Joe Publics or like a Tuesday night at 1 a.m. sweating out the Los Angeles Sparks line.
That's a good question. Be
more depressing, but more fun.
Yeah, well, I've spent some time in the some OTBs around Chicago, so I've seen depressing when it comes to betting. So I would actually have to say the NFL experience, just because it's more vibrant and people are happy and
people aren't taking out second mortgages because Tina Charles went off.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing like that on an NFL Sunday. It's just all good fun.
That's fair. So I know a lot of NBA podcasts, they like to just go through every single over under. And honestly, I don't really like doing that. I think it's kind of boring after a while. It's like, it's a nice mechanism to preview the season. But ultimately, like, you're not really like, it almost like waters down good value picks because you're like, you're forced to weigh in on every single one. And I'm sure, you know, people are like, oh, those are my locks, but it's just kind of waters it down. So I figured we would just kind of go through, find the lines that we find the most interesting and just talk about them for win totals this year. Jeff Sherman from the West, he is from Westgate, right?
Yeah, he's one of the bookmakers there. And I picked up a sheet on Sunday, but today or yesterday, he tweeted out the updated odds.
I'll say this, Nate. I think the extra character limit has really, one, helped Jeff Sherman's game, but I kind of miss having to sort through like six tweets to get through all the over-unders.
Yeah, going through like three, especially when they didn't have threads on Twitter and it was all over the place. You're just trying to figure out all the win totals and other NBA props.
The good old days for complete losers like us. So we do have, odds from Westgate as recent as October 8th. So this should be running on Thursday morning. So they might have moved marginally, but I can't imagine a significant move. If you don't get the better of the line 2 days from now, I'm sorry. But that's just how it's going to go. So what lines have really jumped out to you, Nate, looking at the league-wide?
Yeah, league wide. So nothing that I'm necessarily interested in betting on a win total basis as of now, but something I was tracking all summer, and obviously you were probably tracking and a lot of your listeners, was the LeBron James situation and how it impacted the Los Angeles Lakers win total. And once the Lakers got him, kind of what that win total would be set at. And I remember right when he signed, I think the next day, some offshore sports book, one of like, I think my book here, one of those with like, they have all those weird novelty props with really low limits, I think put the Lakers in the somewhere in the 60s. And at the time, I think there was some hope that either Kawhi Leonard or DeMarcus Cousins would kind of come in and join, and the Lakers would, Paul George, I guess, too, was a possibility at the time, would come in and start kind of a new big three for the Lakers. Well, instead, the Lakers went a route with, instead of trading some young players for a guy like Kawhi Leonard, they added a bunch of veterans like
a bunch of
Rondo, McGee, and so much so that they have such a weird mix of people that when the Westgate opened their numbers on August 5th, the Lakers were only 48.5, which I thought was very low. I was hoping somewhere in the mid 50s.
Yeah, I think we were hoping that the Joe Publix would just go nuts. Like, you would think LA is close to Vegas. Like, a lot of Lakers fans are excited to be relevant for the first time in 8 years.
Yeah, exactly. I think even when the LeBron signed with the Lakers, they were like 6-1 to win the finals. So if you're 6-1 to win the finals, you should be somewhere definitely in the mid 50s, upper 50s on your season win number. So definitely the Lakers stood out as a number that was so low that I don't even want to bet under. I'd only be able to look over.
And it's worth noting that line's moved down.
Yeah.
They're down to 47.5 wins. And it's like, There is a point of no return where it's like, it's so low, you have to bet the over. Just like betting on LeBron's just residual greatness, even if you really don't like the roster.
Right. But, you know, when all those moves were happening this summer and it was kind of confusing what they were doing, you didn't really know what plan they were going with. You were coping, wow, I'll get like a 55.5 or something, and maybe like an 8-1 on the no for them to make the playoffs. And I think there would have been great value there, but now it looks like their playoff no is plus 300. So that's definitely out of the picture. But when it does come to the Lakers,
Justin would probably, my co-host would probably love to get 3-1 odds on the Lakers not making the playoffs, because I think he thinks it's going to happen. I actually think they're going to be pretty good.
The West is deep though, where there are a lot of good teams, much better than the East, where the top 10 teams in the West have a win total of over 41.5 currently. That's as long as Jimmy Butler still stays with the Timberwolves. Who knows what will happen if he leaves, and that number probably will go down.
Yeah, that's already dropped three wins. They opened at 44.5. So Vegas is clearly hedging their bets to make sure they don't get destroyed.
Correct.
I do wonder with the Lakers, and sorry to anyone who's ready for us to make a pick. We're just going to talk conceptually about lines. I wonder if that line having dropped since it opened means the sharps are just pounding that under.
Yeah, you
with think like maybe, heavy money.
You think maybe so, because the casual bettor who's in from Southern California for the weekend, who's a Lakers fan, is just going to bet over blindly. But the real money might be on the Lakers under. Hard to say. One way I think I would approach the Lakers, and if you are kind of wanting to bet against the Lakers but don't want to tie up your money for 7 months on a win total, I think betting against the spread again on them, or betting against them in individual games early in the season, probably is the way to go.
I'm really excited to see what the Lakers do if they start out poor, because like all this like high concept talk about they're going to run and LeBron's going to play off ball and LeBron's really excited for the young guys to develop. Like, I wonder how that'll hold up in the face of adversity. And that's actually a good reason why you shouldn't bet the under, is like, there's a world in which LeBron tries to leverage a win now trade where they go pick up someone that actually makes them better. And then all of a sudden you're miserable with your under 47 when they're looking like a 55 win team.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to do that in that case. Definitely the Lakers could make a move if they start off well. But
or if they start off poorly is kind of my point. Like,
yeah,
I think they're almost more likely for LeBron to get impatient and say, do something. I'm not playing with these bums anymore.
Right. But you have to kind of wonder if he played 82 games last year. He played deep into June or deep into the playoffs last year. If him knowing that the Warriors now have Cousins in the mix on that 1 year deal, if they're so far better than the Lakers right now, if they kind of maybe not try as hard during the regular season to maybe make a bigger push for the 2019-2020 season.
Worth noting that LeBron is also going to be splitting time between two teams, the Lakers and the Toon Squad. So, and if it's anything like the last game the Toon Squad played, it's going to be really physical. And it's just worth wondering if his body's going to hold up in the face of that. But to the LeBron note, there's always two sides of that story. And we got to look at the Cavs. They opened at a paltry 30.5. That line has been bet up a half a game to 31. So they are in Vegas's eyes, right on par with the Orlando Magic. Where do you settle on that line?
Yeah, I have to say, this is a bet I'm going to make. I'm going to bet under on the Cavaliers. And sorry to all the loyal Cavs fans out there, but a few reasons why I really like under here. And we mentioned LeBron playing 82 games last year, and that Cavaliers team still only won 50 games. And if you look deeper, and I think point differential is a kind of a good way to judge how a team did from the during the regular season. It's a 82-game sample size, so plenty to see there. But their point differential is only 0.9. So 0.9 point differential, which basically is like...
That's like a 42-win point differential, yeah, really.
Team just above 500. And I think the reason why they won 50, even though they had the point differential of a team in the low to mid 40s, was just because of LeBron at the end of the game is the guy you want on your side. And the Cavs won a lot of coin flip games because of that. And another thing that I think might go a little bit unnoticed with the Cavaliers, even though LeBron isn't on the team, he definitely tortured some of the top teams in the Eastern Conference over the last 4 years, namely the Celtics, the Raptors. I guess the Hawks aren't relevant, so you can't really include them. But I think that when the Cavaliers come to town or teams go to Cleveland, they're going to still play the Cavs tough.
Yeah, they're going to relish getting to beat the shit out of them.
Exactly, especially Toronto, especially Boston.
Yeah, Boston, you can tell they're still – I don't know if you saw the scuffle between JR and Marcus Smart during that preseason game, but like clearly there's still bad blood there. And the Cavs have a lot less ammo to go into that fight with.
Right. And even though LeBron's not there, Kevin Love's still there, Lou's still the coach, J.R. Smith. So there's still some pieces from those teams that were some players who were key parts of knocking those teams out of the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to relish getting to, especially like going into Cleveland and just like smashing them. I won't be betting the under on this one because I actually think it's a really good line. I think like the best way to look at over under lines is like what you think a team's best case scenario is, what their worst case scenario is, and somewhere in the middle. And if I would guess, I think the Cavs are going to win 30 games this year. And if my guess is within 1 to 2 wins of the line, that means I think it's a pretty good line, right? There are teams where you see their number and you think, oh, the only way they get to that number is, I mean, literal best case scenario. If everything goes right, they get to that number. Or, and so you bet the under. Or if you see a line that's, oh man, like everything would have to fail for them to be that bad, you bet the over. Because, you account for, some positive, some negative. Cavs, I just think, is a good line. Like, I think LeBron was worth about 20 games for them last year, and that puts him right at 30, right?
Yep, and I think that he might even be worth more than 20 games. But yeah, if you think that, then that's 30. And really, when it comes to betting basketball or really any sport, I think the only time you have a good bet, unless there's some other circumstance, is if you think the line is wrong. So if you think the line is right, There's no pressure in betting it. There's 29 other teams to bet on, and you don't really want to bet too many teams, and you might just want to pick, you know, between 2 and 4, just kind of have throughout the season. So if something's right on the money, then you just move on to the next team and begin researching them.
Yeah, I would agree. To that end, I think we both have a team for whom we think the line is not correct. And that is the Indiana Pacers, who open at 47.5. And as of Monday, are at 48. They won 48 wins last year. And to me, Nate, this is a team whose best case scenario is staying about where they were.
Right. I think the line, like you said, we think the line's a little bit off. I think a lot of this win total's built in to how they overachieved last year and then how they played against the Cavaliers in the playoffs, taking them to 7 games. And the last thing we remember with the Pacers was them playing a very close series with the Cavaliers, where I think after game 3, going into game 4, they were favored to win the series. So everyone's going to remember that. People liked what they did in the offseason. I know you weren't a fan, Carter, but it's
I want to talk about that, because it feels like they got a bunch of credit for signing a bunch of almost scrubs. Like they way overpaid Doug McDermott, who for some reason, like after half a year in Dallas, like everyone decided was okay, even though everyone had pretty much agreed he was a bust before then. So then they signed two guys that I don't think, then they signed Kyle O'Quinn, who's like an NBA Twitter darling. And yeah, I like him. He's fine. But like, I don't see how a backup 5 is going to move the needle when they really need to be playing Domantas Sabonis at backup 5 for the minutes so they can split up him and Miles Turner a little bit. Even if they're going to start together, you want to split them up as much as possible. And then they signed Tyreke Evans, who I've never seen a better candidate for huge regression from last year to this year. Like, I think he shot like 42% off the dribble 3s last year. Like, if you really think that's who he is now, be my guest. I got some great beachfront property to sell you. I don't think he's going to thrive without the ball in his hands, and everything that the Pacers do revolves around Victor Oladipo right now.
Yeah, so I think it's a perfect storm where you have a team that did well in the playoffs, overachieved last year. People like the offseason moves. It's kind of like in the NFL when a team kind of wins the offseason, you look to bet against them on the season win total under, because there's a lot of buzz for the team. And just kind of a basic strategy with win totals in really any sport is trying to look for the team that overachieved the year before and bet against them. So last year, the Indiana Pacers, their win total opened at 30.5. So basically at that point, they were expected to be kind of in that group of tanking teams based on what the odds makers told us. They ended up winning 48 games, point differential of 1.4 throughout the season. So definitely a clear team that overachieved.
And they're not going to catch anyone off guard this year.
Right. I also wrote down that they won't be overlooked this year. There'll be a target on their back. They were a good team. And last year, I think they maybe benefited from some teams, you know, maybe they were part of a second part of a back-to-back or somewhere in that mix of a bad scheduling spot, and they just kind of punted that game against the Pacers. So we're not going to see that this year. People know that they made the playoffs last year, and teams are definitely going to give them their best effort.
Yeah, I think, like, if you're looking at, like, what a successful season would be, like, if I were a Pacer fan, I think if you could divorce yourself from, you know, big expectations, I would say 45 wins. Like, okay, we're going to lose a few more of those 50-50 games, but as long as everyone still stays playing well, 45 seems fair. 48, that means they got to win 49 games in order for you to hit your over bet. Whereas the under just feels more reasonable. I feel like their best case scenario is 48. Their worst case scenario would be, you know, one of those Pistons type regressions where the Pistons just flip flop every year. But I think their most likely scenario is like 43 to 45 wins. And I think there's a lot of value there.
Yeah. I think that would be good enough to make the playoffs. Cause I tallied the win totals in order by conference. And right now the 8th best team or the 8th highest win total in the Eastern Conference is the Pistons with 38.5.
Ugh.
So it looks like there's like a group of seven teams in the East where it'd be a surprise if one of those seven didn't make the playoffs. So the Pacers should make the playoffs. I know they're 6-1 on the no to make the playoffs. So you're kind of a long shot bet if you are taking the no. So I think under is definitely a good play. And I think we maybe 2 years ago with the Trailblazers after Aldridge left, they were lined at like 26 wins or something, and then they had a really good season, and the next season they jumped up 20 wins on their win total to 46, and that was kind of the automatic regression bet that you're looking for when betting on a team that overachieved the year before.
Yeah, and it's like there's an expectation in the NBA of like linear growth. It's like, oh, they won 48 and they're young, so they'll win 50 this year. And it's like, that's just not how it works. It's not that simple. It's not that easy. As teams get used to what you're running. I mean, they caught everyone by surprise last year. And I think even going into that game, knowing they have a good record, you're like, these guys, Victor Oladipo, like, he was a bum on the Thunder last year. It's fine. We got this. And then they went and punched everyone in the mouth. I just think teams are going to be more ready for them this year. So I think we both definitely like that under. Do you have any overs that you're a fan of?
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this. My over is the Houston Rockets, and I was a little confused by this line. Opened in August at 54.5. It's got bet up right now to 56.5. This is a team that won 65 games last season. And we were talking about point differential differential earlier and how important that is. Well, they had the top point differential in the league at 8.5 throughout the whole season, regular season. And the reason I like this bet is because they're a really good regular season game because of the way they use James Harden and Chris Paul, how they stagger the minutes where, for the most part, if the game's competitive, at least one of them is on the court at the same time. So they had a lot of success in the regular season because of that. They won 65 games, even though Chris Paul missed a good amount of time. And another reason is I think this win total will be higher if they somehow were able to beat the Warriors last year. Obviously, before Chris Paul got hurt, they probably were the series favorite after they took that. They went up
3-2.
Yeah, they went up 3-2 and Chris Paul got hurt. And I remember right after the game looking at updated series prices, and I think the Rockets were a favorite. And then we got more news right after that game about Chris Paul's injury, and the Warriors flipped as a favorite. So the Rockets were right there where if they won the West and then would have been favorites in the NBA Finals against the Cavs, we would have definitely seen this win total, I think, in the either higher 50s, probably low 60s, depending on what they did in the offseason. And I know the Trevor Ariza loss could be considered a big loss and maybe a con for betting this win total over, and maybe even a bigger con, Carmelo Anthony. But I still think this team has a potential to win 60 games. They know if they want to win the West, they need home court over the Warriors. And I think the way that they're built is for the regular season.
Yeah. You know, when you said, first off, sorry, I just dropped my water bottle and it's like crashed onto the floor while you were making that point very well. I think like when you told me Rockets, my first instinct was to kind of turn my nose up at it. It didn't sound very good to me, but the more I think about it, it's like, you're right. They won 65 games. Are they really 9 games worse next year? That seems like kind of an overreaction to an offseason that admittedly was not like ideal, but like, I think people are kind of freaking out a little bit too much. I mean, Trevor Ariza is a nice player. I think James Ennis is going to be just fine, especially as Ariza gets older. I know they lost Luke Richard in Mute. I don't know, man. It's just like all these guys that like NBA Twitter just like idolizes, and I'm just like, they're all fine. They're all fine. You can get guys to play hard and hit, you know, 35% of their threes. And you know, the Melo thing has potential to be a problem, but I actually am on the side of the idea that I don't think Melo is just going to matter. I think he's just going to be a volume shooter off the bench. And every team has one of those, for the most part. And a lot of good teams do. So as long as he's not like as long as Mike D'Antoni, who probably already hates the guy from their time in New York, doesn't like go out of his way to give him huge minutes, I don't really think he's going to swing their season one way or the other. I think he's just going to provide some volume shooting, which they do need when their stars are resting. You know, he's not so bad that he can't do that. It just feels like an overreaction to the Melo thing to me.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why it's that low. And I just think, like I said, I don't think the factor of Harden and Paul, how they use them in different moments of the game where they're not both on the bench at the same time, helps them a lot win those kind of toss-up regular season games, even though the Western Conference is super deep.
I would agree. So moving on, looking at, are there any other lines that you think are interesting, over or under-wise?
Over-under-wise, I think we mentioned the Lakers. I guess one team that was interesting, I don't really have an opinion at all, but the Utah Jazz have the third highest win total in the Western Conference. Which
people
is,
love the Jazz, man. A lot of people are picking the Jazz to finish second in the West. And yeah. I just don't get the love affair, man. Gobert gets hurt every year. Everyone seems to like Dante Exum, even though he hasn't really shown that much. And also gets hurt every year. And like, are we sure Donovan Mitchell isn't going to just take a minor step back? Like we're asking a lot out of him, to all of a sudden, I mean, now in fairness, I will say this about the win total lines in the West, Nate, like, yes, there's a lot of teams that are over 40 wins, only three in the 50s.
Right.
Like a lot of these teams, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, the Spurs, even the Jazz are only at 50. So it feels like Vegas thinks these teams are going to be a little more evenly distributed. Like the highest win total is the Warriors at 62.5, then the Celtics 58.5. But then everything else, it's 56.5 down to 23.5 for the Hawks, which is, by the way, a little too low in my opinion. That actually might be my favorite little over bet, but that's just because I believe in Trae Young. And we're going to get to that in a minute, but I think he's going to be a player as long as he plays the right style of basketball. In terms of a good under that we haven't talked about since you already shit on my team, we'll talk about your team. Bulls at 30, that feels like it could get disastrous real quick.
Yeah, especially if our boy Lauri Markkanen,
Laurie,
the first month, and
rip in peace your arm.
At least Jabari Parker will be able to play his natural position of the power forward, right?
Yeah, but I'm worried Jabari might be cooked.
Yeah,
you can't tearing your ACL that many times. I just like you have to at least be a little nervous that he's just not good anymore. And LaVine has shown very little development in any part of his game other than chucking, and like it's like a team full of guys who can score, but I don't really know how you generate a smart offense out of it. I think Fred Hoiberg has his work cut out for him, and I don't really know if he's up to the task. I think that team competed pretty well last year, and I really like Wendell Carter Jr. It's just like that's a team that I see that over under, and I'm a little hesitant to pull the trigger there. Also, we lost our gambling preview last year. I'm back in on the Grizzlies, baby. Give me the over. That's a 36 win team.
Ooh, I don't know if I'm there yet with them, but I'll say one thing about the Bulls. They're a team that I'm going to look to blindly bet, maybe not blindly bet, but look to bet over the point total in their games because of how poor defensively they are. And maybe if you want to bet against the Bulls, bet on the teams are playing over the team total, which you have to kind of dig for on an individual basis. But yeah, the Bulls are going to be a disaster defensively. And the time when the Bulls did compete well last year is when they had Nick Mirotic playing, and when he was healthy, and he kind of ruined their tanking plan. And when they traded him, then they became really bad. So no Mirotic this year. So the line on the Bulls moved from 27.5 to 30.
Yeah, I don't get what they've done to earn 2.5 win. I thought 27.5 was a pretty good line.
Yeah, I think that line is good, but I think the way to attack the Bulls is betting over in their games and kind of doing that until the betting market catches up with that.
I would agree with that. I think that's a good way to look at it. And plus, like, are you really trying to tie yourself up into watching 60 Bulls games this year because you bet $50 on their under?
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun. I know you mentioned the Grizzlies. You were on last year in our Lost podcast. The team I was on that I got totally wrong was the Dallas Mavericks. I liked them last year, and then they quickly became a tanking team. And I kind of like them again this year, but because of what happened last year, not going to bet their season win total of 34.5. But I'm going to look to bet on them early. And
I'm really interested to see, because they're like all in. Like, they just paid DeAndre. Well, right. Not all in. Like, it's a 1-year deal for DeAndre, and this is clearly Dirk's last ride. But it does feel like they should be better, just in terms of, like, they do have good players on this team. I think it just kind of depends on if your Slovenian boy, your fellow Slovenian, yeah, Luka Doncic, is good or not. Like, everyone's so sure he's going to be good. And, like, I just, anytime NBA Twitter gets too sure of something, I get nervous. And they're really sure about this one. And it's like, well, let's make sure he's good before we're betting that over.
Well, did NBA Twitter, were they watching the Eurobasket in 2017 when they slayed the Dragon of Spain and then took down
Serbia? Well, I'll tell you this much, Nate. They'll pretend they did when they watch three clips. that's all NBA Twitter needs to develop a definitive opinion. Right. I think with any European, NBA Twitter, like, overcorrects. Like, because, like, they know dummies are going to be like, oh, this, he's going to be the next Darko or something like that. So they, like, they just, like, blindly overlook any of their flaws because they're like, they just have to, like, go too far the other way. I did this with Mario Hezonja, my boy, current Knicks legend, Mario Hezonja. It happens, but, like, I just kind of want to wait to see it. I think he's going to be good, but I'm going to wait. So I'm not going to bet that over.
Well, I'm not going to bet early, but I think when they play some of the better teams in the West and are bigger underdogs, maybe they can catch one of those teams napping and there's some point spread value in
Plus, the Mavericks. Plus, Rick Carlisle's a great coach.
Right. So, I don't want to bet them over on the win total, but I do think they will be better. And after what happened last season, I think that there's going to be some big spreads when they play maybe like a team like the Thunder or the Pelicans or the Nuggets, and maybe can catch one of those middle of the pack Western Conference playoff teams off guard on a random weeknight.
Sure. I would tend to agree. So let's move past over-unders and into the props and other futures. And let's start with MVP, because I actually think it's really interesting because I don't think anyone should be a significant favorite this year. And I actually like going a little bit down the list for my MVP picks. Does anyone jump out to you on the MVP list as a potential good bet?
Yeah, these are tough ones to pick just because a lot of the times the cream of the crop rises and one of the favorites win, but it's no fun betting favorites. You definitely want to hit a big payday on these kind of these props.
Here's my counter to that, Nate, though. I don't think some of these longer shots are that long of shots. Kevin Durant is plus 1,000.
So 10 to 1 on Kevin Durant?
10 to 1. Steph is 12 to 1.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's just because they're together, obviously, there's kind of the assumption that one of them, they'll split, you know, shots and usage rate. And
yeah, I get that, Nate, but like Anthony Davis is second on Bovada right now at plus 450. And we probably have failed our listeners who maybe are gambling novices. Plus 450 just means if you bet $100, you win 450.
Right, so if it's like 9-2, basically.
Yeah, 9-2 odds.
Those kind of odds.
And Anthony Davis is plus 450. He's got the second best odds for MVP. And can you quickly tell me what their odds are to not make the playoffs? Because I'll bet it's not that crazy. I see this team. I don't think a 7 or an 8 seed can win MVP.
Yeah, Anthony, the Pelicans are plus 155 to the no to make the playoffs.
So it's
to make the playoffs minus 190.
Yeah, it's not even so. It's not particularly unlikely that they miss the postseason. That's what right. that line tells me.
But
so,
but he's out 450. Yeah, I think maybe do you think that reason why he's the second favorite right now, at least according to Bovada, is because DeMarcus Cousins isn't there and he kind of went off. At least
I think it's just that he went off, and yeah. I think really what it is they don't have anyone they like. Like LeBron is leading at +333. If the Lakers win 55, 60 games, he'll definitely win it. If they don't, he almost definitely won't, because they're not going to give it to like a 47-win Laker team. Giannis, I think, is actually, if you're going to bet a favorite, Giannis at +500, he's got the third best odds. That's my guy. I think he's fine. He's got his first good coach in Mike Budenholzer. So the Bucks actually should overperform for once instead of underperforming. He's going to put up gaudy numbers like he always does. And this time it's actually going to be leading to consistent wins. And then you look at the guys around him, James Harden. I have a sneaky feeling that voters are going to look at James Harden, even if the Rockets are good again, and go, is this really a guy we want to make a two-time MVP?
Yeah, I'd agree, especially with how the playoffs ended for him and just kind of his playoff past.
Yeah, I don't think people want to like James Harden. I think it's like we just had to give him MVP last year, but I just don't think he's a two in a row, a consecutive MVP type of player. And even if he plays well again, because he's going to play well, he always plays well. I just think voters, like, that stuff matters to voters, and they're going to be more likely to give it to someone else. Kawhi is a really interesting bet if he stays healthy at +950. So I think if I'm looking at MVP, if I'm betting one of the top line guys, I'm going with Giannis at +500. But I think you should consider sprinkling a little money on Kawhi, Durant, or Curry at 950, 1000, and 1200, respectively.
I'm looking at the odds, and Karl Anthony Towns, I know, a lot, he may sign that big contract, and a lot of negativity towards the Timberwolves, but he's 60-1 right now. Do you think that line would drop if they trade Jimmy Butler before the season ends or before the beginning of the season?
I actually think it would go the other way, because it'd be less likely to make the playoffs.
Okay. I wasn't sure if, you know, I think there's a kind of a mindset of MVP betting and maybe a bias between people who play fantasy basketball, like daily fantasy, and kind of just picking on those players who get them a lot of points. And I know Towns is definitely a guy monster when it comes to that.
Let's just say the word is out, man.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows that guy is not a winner.
Yeah.
And I think the media who gets past these rumors would be loath to vote for him. How about DeMarcus Cousins listed at +1750, 17,500 to win MVP?
Yeah.
He's not going to play till January.
I think I'd rather pick Lonzo Ball at 450-1, even though he might not start for the Los Angeles Lakers.
And we would be remiss as a Cavs podcast not to tell you, you can get Kevin Love at a cool 500-1. So if you think the Cavs are winning 50-60 games this year, be our guests. But we will probably pass on that. Let's move over to Rookie of the Year, where the lines are even more interesting to me. Tell me, Nate, why the hell shouldn't I go put $20 on Trae Young at +1100?
Well, because he wasn't very good in college.
Summer league? I don't give a shit.
I watched a lot of Big 12 basketball last year, and once, you know, Press Virginia got in his face and he had to go to some of those tougher gyms across the Great Plains of the United States, he kind of seemed rattled. So
he's getting triple teamed every possession.
This is the perfect spot for him, though, in Atlanta, where he will be having ball dominant. They traded up for him, so obviously they think highly of him. So they're going to run everything.
And they traded Dennis Schroeder to clear his starting spot.
Right. So you're kind of looking for that player who's going to put up a lot of stats as a rookie. And that's why Colin Sexton is the third best odds at 5-1. Just
yeah, if you think Colin Sexton is going to like get the raw numbers to get Rookie of the Year, and like even if you really like Colin Sexton, I don't know how you don't put the same money on Trae Young for twice as good of odds.
Right.
Like, yeah, I guess Colin Sexton might win more. Like, I guess if you're thinking like, oh, what if the Cavs somehow manage a 40-win season, like squeak into the playoffs as the 8th seed, and because they're going to need Sexton to be really good for that to happen. But it just feels like Trae Young is going to get an inefficient 20-7 in a sleep.
The problem with the rookie of the year odds for me is there isn't that really big Lauri Markkanen type 80-1 number. I think that after
the Lauri Markkanen Memorial Rookie of the Year bet, I have one for you. That's not
the one you tweeted about me earlier. Is it the one you tweeted about me earlier?
We're not. Harry Giles is plus 2,500. And while Kings fans are clearly in on him, he's going to play behind Marvin Bagley. He's not going to get the chances. I actually have a guy who's an even longer shot than Harry Giles on Bovada. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, plus 3,300. Likely starting point guard for the Clippers, assuming that Pat Beverley is not ready to come back yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, from a college standpoint, he definitely improved at his time with Kentucky and got a lot better as the season went on. And playing in a big market like LA definitely is helpful.
Playing in a big market, playing on a team that, even though they're not good, has a lot similar to Colin Sexton, has a lot of NBA players on it. Like NBA, like we know they're solid at least. And like that matters for a rookie because it's like a lot of safety valves and they're not going to get the full attention of the defense every single night. So yeah, it just feels like that's like, it's another line that's just not right. Like why is Michael Porter Jr., whose back might not work, have better odds than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander by 900?
It just, right. And I went to Mizzou and I'm a Mizzou fan. So, definitely stay away from any Michael Porter Jr. Action because
did not look great.
You're going to be following Twitter every day, seeing the latest status or which back specialist you saw from somewhere around the country.
Yeah, and you're probably going to have to buy a red hat if you're really going to support him because he wants to make the Nuggets great again. If you know what I'm saying. Yes, but yeah.
I was going to say, we were talking before the show about our boy Dante DiVincenzo.
Cool 5,500 if you're a Dante DiVincenzo fan. And if you're another white guy, a fan of another white guy, Grayson Allen, cool, plus 9,000.
Yeah.
We made that Lauri Markkanen bet very speculatively. It was 80-1. And I think in any world, we were justified in making that bet because I think we got unlucky from the perspective of we hit arguably the best rookie trio in like 15 years and since probably 2003 in Tatum, Mitchell, and Simmons.
Right.
Like, how could we have known all three of them were going to be that nuts? Because Markkanen was good.
Yeah, especially when some playing time opened up for him. When starting power forward Nikola Mirotic got punched by reserve power forward Bobby Portis, and it just kind of like all like kind of came together. We're like, oh my gosh,
it's happening!
Markkanen had the like scored 30 points a game for Finland at the European Championship. So then that line dropped, and he was the 7th overall pick, so he has a lot of pedigree. And then that happened where he was going to get a lot of playing time and. They kind of revolved the offense.
I genuinely think, because really what we needed was to get be a two-horse race between him and whoever was going to win. So we could just bet like, you know, $1,000 on Simmons or Mitchell or whoever. But it ended up, he didn't even make top three because we have bad luck. But still justify, I still feel like that was a very defensible point. And I really do think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 33-1. That's pretty outrageous odds for a guy who also was a lottery pick, is going to have the opportunity, easily could have gone higher if teams had just picked it a slightly different way. And I would honestly say he's more likely to win it than three or four guys in front of him on the odds. So that is definitely someone to keep our eye on. Nate, any other bets that you see interesting on around the sports books, or have we pretty much exhausted all our options?
I think one way to go, and it's kind of going back to teams we like or dislike, kind of the over-under route, but instead of an over-under, a division bet. And I know in the NBA, divisions are kind of useless with how the playoffs work.
But not useless still, in Vegas.
Yeah, there's still markets for them and ways to bet them. And I noticed the Boston Celtics were -130 to win their division, which is basically saying that they're going to have a better record, probably the best record in the East, and have a better record than the Raptors and 76ers, who's their best competition.
God, I remember when they used to call the Atlantic division the Titanic division because it was so shitty.
I don't remember those days, but I didn't even know someone's in the Northwest too. The geography is all messed up, I think.
Right? Oh yeah, it's the Thunder in the Northwest because they the Sonics moved there and they're like, you're still in the Northwest. It's fine.
Yeah, that's a slap in the face. But yeah, I like the Celtics -130. The Raptors in that division are +260, and the 76ers are 3-1. And the other two teams are the Nets and Knicks. So obviously, you don't have to worry about them. I just like the idea of this bet because of the way the Celtics play, where they really, really try in the regular season, because we all know Brad Stevens came from Butler and has that college mentality.
They won 55 games last year with zero Hayward and only half a season of Kyrie.
Right. So they get Hayward back. Tatum and Brown developed very well in Hayward's absence. So maybe it'll be a little tough at first juggling all those players and with the minutes and how they're used. But if you look at the odds to win the Eastern Conference, the Celtics are the odds on favorite at -130. So they have the same odds to win the East as they do to win the division. And I know that's...
So if you're going to bet, if you think they're going to win the East, you might as well bet the division because you're just taking out any surprise interlopers.
I think if you think they're going to win the East, you think they're going to be amazing and going to win over 60 games and likely winning the division, because I don't think the Raptors or 76ers are quite at that level this season. So
yeah, I think the Raptors are your only real threat. Like,
yeah,
the Sixers won 52 games last year. I would be stunned if they take like a 6-game jump up to like 58. And I think that's going to be about what wins this division. So the Raptors are really like, you're just betting against the Raptors at that point. Like Celtics versus Raptors, who do you think is going to have more wins in my eyes? And are the Raptors on that division?
The Raptors are +260.
Oh, I kind of like that actually. I might like that more.
The Raptors are 4-1 to win the East. And the 76ers, who don't have as good odds
to win. They're +250 to win the East, but they're +260 to win the division.
So the Raptors are +400 to win the East.
I think you just bet that then. That's weird that the Celtics win the East and win the division are so disparate or are so close when the Raptors are so disparate, because it's a three-team conference at the top. Maybe the Bucks can break in. But I don't think they would win 16 more games than last year. I think that's a mistake. And I think you actually would want to bet. I think that actually, do you think that would be a good hedge almost? Just throw, if you think the Celtics are going to win the division, but you think, maybe the Raptors might burn me, just bet the Raptors to win the East at +400.
Yeah, the thing with those bets is usually you can wait closer towards the playoffs or sometime in the middle of season to get the better number. There's really not much value betting on these future bets, especially to win the Eastern Conference, which won't be decided until late May, to bet that in October. So you can bet it, around Christmas. I think pretty much every day they're updating odds. So if one of those teams starts off poorly, but you think they're still going to be good, you can get a better number. So like the Celtics at -130 is an absolute joke. If you're going to bet that, I think that's good value, because they could maybe struggle, get off to like a, 6-6 start or something, if some of the pieces have trouble meshing early in the year, and then you can get like +150 or something. So I think it's always good to wait when it comes to betting the East and West and NBA finals until at least you see something that really sticks out, or just wait till the playoffs and kind of bet the series prices and go from there.
That makes sense. So I think we're just about out of time, but before I say goodbye, with LeBron going West and probably breaking his final streak, and the Cavs obviously almost certainly not going back to the finals this year, I'd like to pour one out for our two favorite bets Kevin Love first to score in game one of the finals. He got the first shot, I think, 3 years in a row.
I remember he definitely did this year. And
he threw it off an air ball or something.
Yeah, it was like a shot clock violation or.
Yeah, he hit the side of the backboard and then the shot clock violation went off.
But one year you won it, right?
Yes, I did. I did. I won it in 2016. And I think I got it like plus 750. And then we also need to pour out, because LeBron almost certainly won't be back to the finals this year, LeBron to lead the series in rebounding, which he does every year.
Yeah.
Because he plays 46 minutes a game. He's always like plus 400.
Yeah. I think with Draymond Green usually would be the favorite when it came to that, or maybe even Tristan
or Kevin would always be the favorites, but those guys always ended up playing like 26 to 32 minutes, and LeBron's out here playing like 45. It was like the most consistently terrible line set that really what we should have done is just saved all our bets for the year, saved all our money on things that were closer to 50-50 propositions, just go all in on the LeBron to lead the series in rebounding, because it won every single year.
Yeah, definitely will be different this year looking at the NBA Finals.
God, it's going to be so weird to not have him there.
LeBron and the Cavs in, because that was kind of just a normal routine the last four Junes, where you were looking and handicapping a Cavs-Warriors Finals, and it just seemed like it was inevitable every year. And even though it was very close to not happening last year, it somehow pulled through and unfortunately couldn't be as competitive as some of the other series.
Damn game one. Oh, well. Anyway, Nate, thank you so much. I think our listeners are going to be very informed. You're certainly one of my very best friends and one of the best gamblers I've ever met. Nate, of course, won the 2016 World Series of Handicap. 2014.
It's been a while since I...
Holy shit, we've known each other a while.
Yeah.
Nate won the 2014 World Series of Handicapping. He's an NFL better at heart, but every now and again, he joins us for these NBA discussions. And
yeah, I like any sport where there's a point spread, and you could bet on that. So basketball definitely falls in under that category, and that's why I'm excited for the NBA season to start.
And we don't have to worry about boosters paying off coaches in the college ranks.
Yeah,
or the lines,
or 19-year-olds trying to make a three throw to ice the game or something. That's college basketball is tough.
I'll never forgive Rick Barnes for that loss.
Oh, no.
To Texas.
Horrible memory.
Against Iowa State.
Speaking of Hoiberg, I think that was a Hoiberg coach team that...
Rick Barnes, you son of a bitch. I think he's at like Texas A&M now. Anyway.
He's at Tennessee right now, I think.
Tennessee. That's where he is.
Yep.
That'll be great until he gets fired for either underperforming or paying players. Either one's happening within the next 3 years. Nate, thank you so much for joining us. Justin will be back with us next week as we kind of dive back into the Cavs. If you want to support the pod, please like and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify. We're pretty much everywhere at this point. And if you really want to support the pod, please leave us a review on iTunes. If you want to join our exclusive Chase Down Discord chat, where we can kind of get away from the toxicity of Twitter and just be Cavs fans, all you got to do is review us on iTunes and email chasedownpod@gmail.com with a little screenshot of your review, or just tell us what you reviewed. We'll believe you. And we'll shoot you an invite, and you can join our budding community. I think we're getting near 50 members at this point, which is really exciting, and we're having a lot of fun with the season. So, again, Nate, thank you so much for joining me. It was an absolute pleasure. I miss you dearly every day, and glad we can continue to talk about gambling, even though I no longer live in Chicago with you. Please, as I said, rate and review the pod. Thank you for listening, and as always, go Cavs.